Look at your neighbor. Look at your neighbor. Say nice and loud, neighbor. You sound good this morning. Look at your other neighbor. Other neighbor. You're still my second choice. How many of you, like, you're beside, like, your neighbor can sing? Like, they can sing. Like, yeah, they can sing. All right. How many of you are like, my neighbor just makes a joyful noise? They just. Yeah, oh, come on, man. It's just good. I love just settings like these where leaders are coming together. And I pray that I pray you really lean into the relational opportunity that's been given to you by the generosity of Spruce Lake, the relational opportunity. And it's what Wayne Morgan from National Network of Youth Ministries was talking about this morning, just the opportunity to build relationships with one another. And so please take advantage of that. I will fully admit that in my years as a full-time student pastor, when I would come to events like this, I often found myself being the introvert who hung out in the corner of the room somewhere and was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. And I missed out on so many incredible relationship-building opportunities. As Proverbs says, iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another, right? Like sharpening opportunities. I look back and regret some of those moments. And so I just pray that, you know, Spruce Lake has made incredible investment in your life and your ministry over these two and a half day, or day and a half or whatever it is. But take advantage of it. And not just the sessions, the general sessions, the breakout sessions, but you know, grab lunch with someone that you don't know and grab a dinner together or something. Just, you know, find time to connect with one another, because it's a big part of what this is all about. Hey, I just want to mention a couple of things before I jump into this session. This is going to be a really nuts and bolts session, and I'm going to hit as much of this as I can. And then if we need to kind of do a part two tomorrow, we can do a part two. But my ministry table is over here, Leader Generation Table. There's the book I mentioned last night on Psalm 23 is there. And there's actually a little matching bracelet to go with it, right? So fun stuff. And if you really love Psalm 23, we have a whole sermon series on Psalm 23 that's on a little download card that you can get that. So all this kind of fun stuff. And just, you cheered me on last night. So I'm just going to, you just get it all. Because every youth pastor loves free stuff, right? Every youth pastor's mantra is, if it's free, it's from me. Yeah, exactly. That's why you're here at this retreat. Come on, let's just call it what it is, right? Oh, free? Sign me up. Yeah, you know, awesome. And then I'll mention one more thing, and I won't spend a ton of time talking about it, but I threw a card on your chair this morning because I wanted to let you know about two things as a ministry that we offer to equip and challenge youth pastors. So if you're wondering, like, who we are, we are a nonprofit ministry. We've been in existence for about 3 years now, and we basically do three things. I travel and speak. Various camps, conventions, training events like this. Secondly, we have a one-day conference. We actually just had our one-day conference for this area this past weekend on Saturday. I know a couple of you were there for it. Maybe in one of the other sessions, I'll show you a quick video of that so you can kind of get an idea of what that's about. But we do a one-day conference that's meant for a youth pastor to bring their entire leadership team with them. So themselves, their adults, and their student leaders, and all come together and just have an incredible one-day experience together. And then the other thing we do is we do a lot of coaching and training and resourcing and equipping of youth pastors. So on one side of this card, it says Lead Now in the bottom left-hand corner. This is basically a subscription where we offer you about 100 hours worth of training videos from our six different one-day conferences, all the sessions that we've recorded, as well as a couple college-level youth ministry courses that I recorded when I was teaching adjunct at the University of Valley Forge in their youth ministry department. And so we put about 100 hours of content together for you, and we add content every month, and we offer it for $5 a month, right? So that's a pretty good deal right there. And again, just our heart to try to equip youth pastors. And so that's something that you can just sign up for online. You can hit the QR code there and do that on your own at any time, but that's available and up and running. And all the sessions that we just recorded from this past weekend's conference, which is about 20 sessions or so between breakouts and generals, will get added up there. And then some live Facebook training stuff that we're going to start doing. So that's that. On the other side of the card, it says Mastermind. And we got a couple fans because they're in it. Mastermind is probably the number one thing we do as a ministry to coach and equip and train youth pastors. And so I believe leadership growth
Regardless of what you're doing in life, especially when it comes to ministry, I believe leadership growth happens best when there are three core values taking place in your life. One of them is community. We need one another, right? We need one another. There should be some amens on that. We need one another, right? For far too long, pastors and youth pastors alike have allowed isolation to keep them from growing and encouraging one another. And it's one of the reasons why we have such high dropout rates when it comes to youth pastors, because you're trying to do it all by yourself. So it's hard to grow as a leader if you're not in community with one another. It's also hard to grow when you don't have content that strategically helps build you and develop you as a leader. And so content isn't your problem as a pastor these days, as a leader for me. That content isn't the problem, right? YouTube, podcasts, books, it's you got everything you need. The problem is not you finding content. The challenge is finding content that systematically and structurally walks you through a growth process. And so we've kind of built that in our version of Mastermind here. And then the last core value I think that you need is you need coaching. You need live coaching. And so Mastermind includes all those things. It's a six-month experience. There's a lot more I could say about it, but it would actually be better for you if you are interested in this to grab me over the next day and a half and we can talk about it. Or just go to the website. There's like four different videos on our website that kind of walk you through what it is, how it works, how it's structured, what the commitment is on your part, what the financial commitment as well. And I'll say this too, there's a couple others here at this event that are in Mastermind right now, and so they could talk to it from a firsthand basis too if you're interested in that. So again, go to the website. That will help you out, all right? So I want to give you my teaching notes for today, and so if you guys could help me out, put that slide up real quick. The easiest way for me to do that is to send you to our website. It's a direct link that you got to go to. There it is right there. If you go to that website right there, leadthegeneration.com/resources, you're going to see a couple different documents there that you can click on and download. And the one that you're looking for is called Creating a Healthy Family Culture in Student Ministry. And so that's just going to stay up there on the screen, and you can go get that whenever you want, whether you want it now, whether you want it later. But basically everything that I'm going to share here in this session is already there for you. And I it's there for you to take and kind of use it. And one of the reasons I want to give it to you is because some of what I'm going to talk about today are some of the things that my wife and I used to always train our leaders in on a regular basis in our student ministry. And so I just thought it would be helpful for you to have that. I mentioned last night that we own two dogs, real dogs, dogs over 50 pounds. And I know I offended the cat lovers in the room. I don't really care, but I know that I know for a fact that God loves dogs more than he loves cats. This is simple. It's simple. If you spell dog backwards, what do you get? If you spell cat backwards, what do you get? The Antichrist. All right. So now the cat lovers really don't like me. So I took my dogs for a car ride the other day, and my one dog is a hunting dog. He's like a bird dog, and so I have a German short hair pointer. He's a kind of a pup, about 2-3 year old dog, and then I have an older dog, Samson Golden Retriever. He's like 10 years old, and they love going for car rides and everything. They think they're going hunting or something like that. And they jumped in the car and having fun, and we get back home from our little drive around the neighborhood, and Samson's in the back of my SUV, and because he's kind of old and he can't jump around, and my other dog's just like kind of running crazy, and we pull in, and I open up my door, and my dog Dakota, the pointer, he just like runs, like jumps right across, and just jumps out the door and takes off running to the backyard, which isn't really a big deal in our house. There's lots of woods and free space for him to run. I'm thinking, whatever. And I go to the back and I pop the hood, the trunk, and Samson jumps out, and we go walking into the front of the house. And as I'm walking in, I click it so it closes behind me. I walk through the house, go to the back, and I start calling for Dakota, and he's just gone. He's not coming. And because they're hunting dogs and they can get far away from you, they all wear like these e-collars, right? You know? And so I start beeping it, and I'm yelling, Dakota, Dakota, he's not coming. And a couple minutes go by and I'm getting a little frustrated now. I'm thinking, what the heck? And so I start vibrating it, and I'm just like, yelling a little bit louder, and still not coming. And now I'm just getting mad, and I'm like, I'm just going to give you the juice, dude. Like, you getting it. And so I have it on the lowest level, and I start hitting it, and he's not coming. And this goes on for probably 45 minutes. And I'm getting more and more frustrated. Now I'm walking through the woods, which is kind of swampy and it's all muddy, and I'm getting mad, and I'm just like, what, where did this dog go? And then I start to get nervous, because I'm thinking, like, what if he saw a fox and he's a hunting dog, he caught a scent and he's just gone. And I'm thinking I need to get his attention. And so I just start turning the juice up a little bit, and I'm hitting him, you know, a little bit more often, a little bit harder. And I'm like, I don't want to hurt him, but like, he's my dog, you know? And I'm just thinking like, how do you do this to me? Like I bathe you, I feed you, I take care of you. I cuddle with you every morning when we're doing devotions. Like, come on, man. Like, I'm getting mad and mad. And then all of a sudden my anger turns into just sheer panic. Cause I'm thinking, he's gone. I'm never going to find him again. He ran away. My daughters are going to disown me as their father. I've been walking for probably close to an hour now, and I'm coming back in like the front of our house through the driveway there, and I'm pulling my phone out to text my wife, I mentioned last night, my wife's a second grade teacher, and she's at school, and I'm getting ready to text her and say, come home right away, because, like, you know, the dog ran away, and which actually would have been a great day for her. Like, she'd have been like, oh, I'm going to go celebrate. Let's go out for dinner tonight. The dog ran away. And so as I'm sending this text, right before I hit send, I see this movement out of the corner of my eye, and I kind of jump because I was hoping that it was him, and it was. It was him. And he was there right in my car where he had been riding shotgun the entire time for the last hour that I have been shocking the living daylights out of him. And I mean, imagine the poor dog now. And so what had happened was when I walked into the front of the house and he saw the trunk lowing, he must have jumped back in when I wasn't watching, thinking, oh, we're going for another car ride. Let's go. And he's sitting there the whole time, and like, I'm shocking him, and he's probably just thinking, like, I'm right here. Like, I'm here. And I mean, oh gosh, I feel bad. He's never been the same since then. It was kind of weird. It's really jumpy. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. And but it kind of reminded me of like this core principle of youth ministry that sometimes we forget about. Sometimes either it isn't clearly or firmly cemented in our heart whenever we jump into youth ministry, whether it's as a volunteer or, you know, part-time, bivocational, full-time, whatever. Or maybe it's when you've been in youth ministry for a long, long time and your focus starts to shift and you start to think about other things or other aspects in ministry. And sometimes we forget that there are students that in essence are sitting right there saying, I'm right here. How long are you going to run through the woods, and how long are you going to go all over the place, and how long are you going to be doing all these other things and forget about the fact that I'm right here? Like, I came here to like be with you. Like, I thought I was going to have the opportunity to build a relationship with you or with someone else. And so this is what I want to do in this session. And again, and if we run out of time, we'll just kind of do a part two tomorrow on this. But I want to talk to you today. And again, I'm smart enough to know that for most of you in the room, I'm just reminding you of things that you already know. But I don't know about you. That I feel like in the body of Christ today, most of us are educated beyond our level of obedience. Right? And so sometimes I just need to be reminded of stuff. Like, it's not that I don't know it, and it's not that you don't know it, and it's not that what I'm going to share with you is just so utterly profound that you're going to be like, whoa, this was revolutionary. No, not at all. But it might remind you of something that you just kind of lost sight on. And it's how you and I create a healthy culture in our ministry. I had created a culture basically with my dog where he knew that if we were outside and the car doors were open, you jump in the car because we're going to go on the road. I had kind of created that culture with him. And you're creating a culture in your youth ministry as well. And the question comes down to is what kind of relationship-oriented culture are you creating, right? So if you're following in the notes, you know, let's make sure we all are on the same page specifically when we talk about this word culture, right? Because this is kind of like a buzzword in the church world today, like culture, even in leadership circles, in the business world, culture, eat strategy for breakfast. That's like one of those leadership quotes that are out there right now. There's books written about this. But here's what I mean when I say culture, right? Culture for you and your ministry is a combination of two things. It's a combination of your beliefs and it's a combination of your behavior. All right? It's all it really means. It's two things. It's a combination of your beliefs and it's a combination of your behavior. You have a culture right now in your church. Whether you created it intentionally or whether you just kind of happened to it by accident, you have a culture. You have a culture in your youth ministry. It exists. Trust me. And if you're not exactly sure what the culture is, just listen closely when people say things like, oh, you know, around here, it's always, right? Oh, that's always what we do in this place. Like, listen to how they fill in the blanks at the end of those statements, and it will give you an indication of what your culture is. Your culture is a combination of your belief and your behavior. Your belief is things like your stated belief, your vision statement, your mission statement, the stuff you have hanging on the walls, on banners. You know, we believe this. In our youth ministry, we used to have a big banner that said, "You belong here." That's a cultural statement for us. It was a belief statement. We believe this. So you have a belief statement. So you all have that one way or another, whether your church has a stated mission statement or whether you just kind of have different verbiage that's hanging around or just different verbiage that you say on a regular basis. That's a stated belief. That's a part of your culture. But the other part of your culture is your behavior. Right? And this is where most of us lose our focus, right? And we get distracted because our behavior oftentimes doesn't line up with our culture that we say we believe in. And so here's how you know whether your culture is healthy or not. The closer together your belief and behavior are, the closer they are together, then the healthier your culture is. The wider the gap between belief and behavior, the more toxic your culture is. And so, like, if you're serving in a church right now, and you don't have to shake your head or nod or say amen, but if you're serving in a church right now and you would say, "I think our culture is not healthy in our church," it's probably because what you say you believe as a church, there's a big gap between that and what you actually do or how you behave yourself into that culture. Does that make sense? And if you're in a church where you say, "Oh, our culture is really healthy," it's probably because those two things are almost one and the same. Right? So when we talk about culture in youth ministry, what I'm encouraging you to do is to be intentional about the culture that you're building and make sure that your belief and your behavior are as close together as possible, or else you end up with this gap. So in our youth ministry, my wife and I's youth ministry, I came into youth ministry with about 5 years of full-time experience. I had done a lot of traveling and speaking, youth camps, stuff like that. I had run a couple different organizations and events, like missions-type organizations for trips and stuff like that for kids. And so when I came into youth ministry, my thought process was simply this. We're going to blow up. We're going to reach thousands of kids. And all we have to do is have a great band and preach good sermons. You can laugh because it's silly, but that's what I believed in. I'm just saying, that's when I started, I was like, that's all you need. That's really all you need. So in essence, what my belief was and what my behavior was is that when we did our youth service, if everything up here was perfect in excellence, then that would translate to amazing youth ministry out here. And you already know, like, it didn't work. It just didn't work. And so I was sitting with one of my coaches, because I don't just coach other youth pastors. Like, I believe in being coached myself. I still have coaches in my life today. But I'm sitting with one of my coaches. I'm about probably 2 or 3 years in at this point to full-time youth ministry, and I am frustrated. Like, I am so irritated with everything about our youth ministry. And we're sitting there out to eat one night. His name was Darren. And I'm like, "Darren, I just can't get leaders to do stuff. And I can't, and the band is terrible. And I can't get the drummer to play on beat. And the worship leaders can't sing on pitch. And the dude doing the lights is like making kids have seizures because they're like strobe lights all the time. And I can't, and the leaders don't, you know, I'm just picking everything apart. And I'm just like this and that. And I'm like, man, I'm just up there like preaching these amazing sermons and no one even cares, and you know, like I'm just laying it on, and as only a coach can, Darren looks at me and he says, "Hey, I know what your problem is." And I'm like, "Awesome, tell me who the problem is and I'll go fix them right now." How'd that work out for you? Well, you'll find out in a second. He looks at me and he says, "Your problem is that you love your program and you use people. And what you should be doing is loving people and using a program." That dinner was over. I just laughed. I just, no, you pay for that. Boy, but that, I tell you, but that moment, that one phrase right there, "You love your program and you use people when you should be loving people and using your program." That was like a major philosophical shift in my thinking towards youth ministry. And all of a sudden I realized I'm the guy who's lost focus about what youth ministry is really all about. I'm the guy who is running around trying to make the program great, trying to make the sermon great, trying to make the band great, trying to make the room great, trying to do all these things, and there's a kid sitting in the front row and they're like, "I'm right here. What about me? Okay, you know? I mean, just blowing by kids because everything's gonna be perfect, everything's just, right? and just missing it all. And so what I want to do today, this is what, and again, I'm just reminding you of something you probably already know. I'm probably reminding you today of the reason why you got into youth ministry to begin with. But I want to make a case for you today, regardless of your denominational background, regardless of your philosophical view on youth ministry, regardless of how your programs are structured currently, the way you do what you do, whether you're super heavy in small groups or whether you do programs or whether you do a midweek program or whether you do a Sunday morning program or Sunday night or what, none of that really matters to me in the context of this session right here, right? I want to make a case for you why I think that your number one job as a youth pastor or a youth leader or volunteer, it doesn't, again, not title, position, paycheck, budget, none of that matters for what I'm talking about right here. I'm going to make a case for you today why I think that your number one job as a leader who's building relationships with students is to become a spiritual dad or spiritual mom in their life. Right? So again, you might disagree. That's okay. I'm not tweaking your program. I'm not telling you how you need to do things. I'm not telling you how you need to preach. I'm not telling you what theological persuasion you need to be under. None of that. I just want to make this case, okay? And you can agree or disagree, or you can find yourself challenged or just totally in agreement. I'll just make this case to you for why I think that your number one responsibility as a leader is to build relationships with students that can bear the weight of truth. And you only do that when you become a spiritual mom or spiritual dad. I heard a story about a exchange student. You guys ever keep an exchange student in your house? My wife and I did it she was from South Korea, just a really cool girl. So this exchange student comes to America and she's Buddhist. That's her religion. She comes from a country and a family that's what they practice. And so, but she comes and she lives with a Christian family here in America. This is a true story. And, so because she's living with a Christian family, she goes to church every Sunday with them. And after several months of going to church with them, and the pastor of the church, he kind of knew the background, exchange student, knew that, you know, Buddhist, all that. He gave an invitation to receive Christ as Savior, and she responded. So obviously, this is a big day. This is like, everyone's excited. This is awesome. And the pastor's excited as well. And so he comes up to the young girl after his message and after the service is over. And he's just, I just want to say congratulations. It's such an incredible decision that you've made. He said, I just have one question for you. He said to the girl, what was it that I said? Typical preacher. What was it that I said that made you make this decision to give your life to Jesus? And she, just very lovingly, very kind, she says, oh, Pastor, it didn't have anything to do with what you said. She said, since I've come to your country, my host mom has been building a relationship with me. And today, I think Jesus took a walk from her heart into my heart. And I use that story in a lot of my trainings with our volunteer leaders in our youth ministry, because I was always trying to help leaders understand that you and I have to build a relational bridge that can bear the weight of truth, right? If you look at the statistics for how much kids or even adults retain from public speaking settings like this, the numbers are incredibly low. Right? I mean, we retain like less than 10% of what you're actually hearing. Unless you're taking notes, then it will go up. But we put so much emphasis on certain aspects of youth ministry. And again, we've lost our focus where we have kids that are sitting there saying, well, you know, what about me? I'm just here. You know, I used to say to my leaders all the time, especially my small group leaders, and we were very small group oriented youth ministry. And sometimes my small group leaders would get very frustrated because they would feel like, man, I'm just trying to have spiritual conversations with my kids and it just doesn't work and they don't want to pay attention. And I'd be like, that's because you have sixth grade boys. They're not ever going to, like, it's okay, you know, like, just talk about Fortnite. I don't know. Just, it's fine. Like, you know, I had a leader who came into our ministry, him and his wife, Joe and Jess. And Joe comes to me and he says, I want to be a small group leader. And I'm like, well, how do you feel about sixth grade boys? And he's like, yeah, sounds awesome. And I'm like, I got him. Just suckered him right in. He has no idea what he's getting into right now. he starts a sixth grade boys small group, and like a couple months go by, he comes back to me and his like eyes are like rolling back in his head, like what have I gotten into? I would always say this to Joe, but I would say to all my leaders, but I would say to Joe, I say, Joe, I just need to remind you that kids usually won't talk with you about spiritual things until they know they can talk with you about anything. And so you have to build that relational bridge. And for you as a junior high boys leader, it's going to take some time, like a little time, like a lot of time, actually, like years, actually. It's going to take like probably not until like eighth or ninth grade, like maybe, you know? And so Joe just said, all right, I'm not going to give up. 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 3 years later, when his boys were all in ninth grade, they're sitting in a small group, random Sunday morning service. I don't even know what I preached that morning. It didn't tie in at all with where their conversation went. Joe's like trying to, he's up there. It's the same group of guys. He's been with them for 3 years now. He's trying to like talk with them and ask some questions that we had prepared for them to write and everything. And one of the boys is kind of like the leader of the group. He just listens and he's like, Mr. Joe, can we just talk about something? Yeah, man. His name is Pablo. He's like, yeah, Pablo, what's up? He's like, we just need to kind of like tell you what's really going on in our group right now. He's like, okay, cool. So here's the real issue. Like, you're trying to talk to us about these spiritual things, but here's what's really happening in our group. Every one of us in this group are addicted to pornography, and we just really need help. Will you help us? But it took 3 years to build that relational bridge. And that's what I'm talking about when I say you have to build, you and I, we have to build relational bridges that can bear the weight of truth. Kids won't talk with you about spiritual things until they know they can talk with you about anything. Here's the great ending to the story. This upcoming school year, all of those boys graduate from high school, and you know who is still their small group leader? Mr. Joe. And that's what I mean when I say build a culture in your youth ministry that helps create relationships that are strong enough to really be spiritual moms and spiritual dads. Why is this so important? Let me give you some statistics. Again, reminding you of what you already know. It's probably the reason that you got into youth ministry. Back in the 1960s, when we were dealing with students in the 1960s, statistically speaking, only 7 out of about 1,000 students actually saw their parents get divorced. Now it's well over half. You know this. You stand up in front of your kids, whether you're leading a small group or whether you're preaching a sermon, and you look out and you can see immediately, because you know their story, you know their background, that half the kids you're dealing with come from a broken family. Half the kids you're dealing with have a divorce that happened or multiple divorces. Half of your kids come from some form of a dysfunctional home, right? And even if like they have both parents in the house, some of them are still coming from a dysfunctional family anyways. And so the number's very few where you can look at the student and say, that student has a great set of parents that are really passing their faith on to them. And so the gap that ends up happening is we have a generation of kids who really are fatherless. They don't have a spiritual father. They don't have a spiritual mother. In fact, in America, statistically speaking, we're number one in the world when it comes to fatherless kids. Think about that. Think about the impact of that on our ministry. Think about the impact of that. So, some of you in this room, you're like, you immediately feel what I'm talking about now because that's your story. Like, you look at your family situation and you're like, that's exactly what I've been through. That's what I watched my parents go through. And that has just continued to escalate over and over and over and over again. Average American father spends 35 seconds a day of undivided attention with their kids. This is the generation of kids that you and I are ministering to right now. And so this is my case for why it's so important that you do whatever you want to do with programs. I don't care. But that you leverage them for the sake of creating relationships between godly adults and between students. Because we have to have spiritual fathers and spiritual mothers in our world today and in our churches today. I'm going to read a quote to you. This is from a book called Family-Based Youth Ministry by Mark DeVries. He says, research has proven again and again that from project to the penthouse, the crucial factor for kids who make it to maturity, not Christian maturity, in parentheses, he says, is the presence of at least one supportive adult. And those who make it to Christian maturity almost always have what I call an extended family of godly adults in their lives. Now listen to this. He says, when a youth program fails to provide relational connections between students and godly adults, it fails in its fundamental mission. And then he goes on and he says this here. Statistics have shown that students that have grown into solid Christian adults have discovered that the youth program of the large church or the lack thereof in a small church has made no difference. The only difference is the presence of at least one supportive adult. So that's actually good news and bad news altogether, right? Because if you're here and you're like, oh, cool, I got a small youth ministry, well, good. It's great. And I mean it, great. Great. But and you could be here and be like, oh, crap, I have a large youth ministry. Great, I'm glad you have a large youth ministry. I've had both, right? Small and large. But here's the point. Size doesn't matter. What matters is the strength of the relational bridge. Right. And so you might be in the room and I know, listen, I understand you come to events like this and we all deal with our insecurities. And sometimes some of us want to talk about our church situation and we want to talk about numbers because not because of bad motivation. We just want to have those kind of conversations. And then some of us try to hide that information because we're so insecure and we're always kind of sizing one another up and comparing one another. But listen, I don't think any of that matters. I don't think any of it matters at all. You want to talk about it, talk about it. You don't want to talk about it, talk about it. But here's what you need to talk about. What are you doing in your ministry in order to create spiritual fathers and spiritual mothers? That's a conversation that you need to be having. What are you doing, or how do you handle your programs in your ministry so that you leverage it for the sake of building relationships with students? Strong, viable, lifelong relationships. My wife was one of our small group leaders for senior high girls. And they loved her. They called her Mama Julie. Mama Julie, Mama Julie, Mama Julie. And I couldn't, I say that she had a small group, but like her small, like she had like 30 girls in her group. So it really wasn't, it was like a large small group. And I couldn't get any of those girls to leave because they had such a bond with her, right? And they just wanted to be with Mama Julie all the time. And she graduated those girls from high school. She was with them for 4 years. She graduated those girls from high school now, 4 years ago now. Do you know most of those girls still text her? She just traveled to one of their weddings last month, right? Most of those girls are still in a relationship with. She still wakes up in the morning to text message, Mama Julie, Mama Julie, I met a boy. What do I do? Run! Okay, that she's become a spiritual mom. She's become a spiritual mom. I'll say this. Maybe tonight I'll introduce the whole band so you can really know who they are. But most of those young people on stage right there are my spiritual kids. I'm dad to them. And that's literally what they call me. Hey, Dad, right? Because it's just longevity. It's just relationship. It's just you going somewhere and planning yourself, or you, again, creating a culture in your youth ministry where you're saying we are in this for the long haul, and size doesn't matter, and budget doesn't matter, and title and status don't matter, and all of these things that we get so like out of whack about in youth ministry. It all comes back to being reminded, I have to become a spiritual mom or a spiritual dad to my kids, right? So we're kind of winding down on time here. So what I'm going to do, we'll kind of just jump this into part two tomorrow. But there's three things that we used to always train our leaders. And I'll go through these tomorrow in the notes. But we used to always say to our leaders, there's things you have to show kids. You have to show them. There's things you have to tell them. There's things that you have to give them. And so what we'll do in tomorrow morning session is I'll actually treat you tomorrow like you're one of our small group leaders and train you in that same way, you know. But let me just, again, let me finish out with kind of like making my case here for why I think it's so important you become spiritual mom or spiritual dad to these kids. Because culturally speaking, here's the epidemic that we're dealing with in our nation right now. Because of technology, medical technology in particular, and what's happening in our world with that, we now have students that are hitting adolescence and puberty at a younger age, right? And so you have kids that are hormonally and emotionally going through things at very young ages. And if those are girls or young young guys, and they're in homes without the presence of a mom or dad or a spiritual mom or spiritual dad, they don't know how to process that, right? On the back end, we're now at a point in our country where the average young adult is getting married at close to the age of 30. And so in generations prior, we had this short window, like this 4 to 6 year window that we were dealing with when it came to really student ministry or youth ministry or like helping a young person mature from childlike thought process and behavior to adult-like thought process and behavior, right? We had this short little window. Now it's expanded into like this adolescent swamp of like 20 plus years. And why is this happening? Well, some of it's technology and some of it's some cultural stuff, but I think the cultural stuff is directly connected back to the breakdown of the family unit. And again, this is my case to say, like, whatever you do in youth ministry, whatever your gifts are, you might be super gifted when it comes to program. You might be really gifted when it comes to speaking or doing music. You might be gifted when it comes to energy and playing games. You might be gifted with, like, the environment and the room that you create. That's all great. Like, I love all that. That's awesome. I applaud all of those things. I share with you in some of those giftings. But the most important thing becomes, how are we leveraging our student ministry for the sake of becoming a spiritual mom and a spiritual dad to students, right? Right. I just kind of put together some research on this, right? Because what's taken place, you got 20 years now, and we have a culture now that idolizes being young, right? And so this is one of the reasons why kids stay in this like adolescent mindset. This is why you have young adults now that are like, I'm adulting. I hate that phrase. Right? I'm adult. Why are you adulting? I'm adulting because, you know, I got a credit card. No, that's not adulting. You know, I'm adulting because I have, you know, four roommates and I have to pay, you know, rent every month. No, okay. We have a long ways to go. Why is that happening? Well, because our culture idolizes being young. And so the message that's sent to young people is stay young as long as you can, because it's only when you're young, that's the only time in life that you're actually going to be cool and that you're going to be relevant. And so the idea is like, I'm going to stay young. Now think about in previous generations, right? What happened in previous generations? You had teenage boys that dressed like their fathers. Why? Because they had aspirations to be an adult, to be a man, to be a father. Because what? Why? Because they had a father in their life. So they saw what like good Christian mature adulthood looked like. They saw that and they aspired to that. Right? Now we don't have teenage boys that dress like their dads. We have dads that dress like their teenage boys. Right? Same thing is true with moms and girls, right? Now you don't have young women that are looking at a spiritual mother and saying, I can't wait to be married. I can't wait to have a family. I can't wait to like, no, they're like, oh, I want to stay young and I don't want to have responsibility. I don't want to grow up. These are the cultural shifts that you and I are dealing with. And again, the only antidote to this in today's culture is you and I take the role of spiritual mom and spiritual dad. Even for kids that are raised in great families. You know, listen, I was raised in a great family. I still have an incredible relationship with my mom and dad. I talk to them almost daily. I call my dad and mom often and say, hey, would you pray with me? But even with that, I still, as a young man and even now as a middle-aged man, I still have a need for spiritual fathers in my life. I still have a need for mentors in my life. I still have a need for other men my age and other men older than me to speak into my life, right? One of the reasons I'm here this weekend in part is because of Randy becoming like a spiritual father to me. And we get together for coffee, you know, like once a month usually, and he just tells me everything that's wrong with my life, and I'm just like, okay. He doesn't really. He's so gracious, you know. He's like one of those guys when he tells you you're doing something wrong, you're not actually sure he told you you were doing something wrong. You ever meet those kind of people? They say it's so nice. Wait, did I just get rebuked? But you need that, and I need that. And students need this. The biblical construct, let me finish with this thought here. The biblical construct for faith being passed on from one generation to the next, oh, it always happened like this, biblically speaking. You go through all the Old Testament, all the New Testament, but this is always the construct or the pattern that you see. You see, the family is always first, and it was always the primary responsibility of the parent to pass their faith on to the next generation, right? And then secondly, you see the role of the church or the role of the synagogue, especially if it was Jewish culture. You see the role of the synagogue. And then the last thing was peer-to-peer. It was the influence of other people, other young men or young women in their life. And now in our day and age, it's completely flipped. It's totally flipped. And so now we send our kids off to these like big red brick boxes called public high schools. And we basically, and I'm not against public high schools. I mean, I send my kids to a Christian school, but that's just because my wife is a teacher there, right? But we send our kids off to these schools. And we basically, in essence, the message that we're sending to them is this. You go emulate the best version of the peers that you build relationships with. And so most of our students and most of our kids, all they're trying to do is one-up one another. They're just trying to be a better version of something that was a fake version to begin with, right? It's not the real thing. Like the maturity that they're trying to emulate isn't actually maturity. It's like when you drink Diet Coke. It's not the real thing. Decaf coffee. No, that's a waste of time. Like, it doesn't. Vegetarian bacon. Why? Why would you make? Don't even. Like, it's not the real thing. But we got a generation of kids. Stay with me, all the bacon lovers. Okay. We in youth ministry in particular, we have to flip it back. Because it's opposite, it's backwards right now. And so we have kids that are like, oh, I'm just trying to be like a better version of like my, you know, my friends in school. And then maybe I'll rely on the church a little bit to kind of help me. And then it's mom and dad. But, you know, I don't really know. We have to learn how to flip it back. And that's why I'm saying to you, whatever you do in your youth ministry, however you structure it, whatever you do with your programming, all that, if you lose focus on the value of relationship, and I'm not talking about just, yeah, I know kids, I know their names, I know the story. I'm talking about in depth, I'm a spiritual mom or I'm a spiritual dad to these kids. I'm talking about that kind of relationship. Now, I'll let you in on something. It took me about 10 years in full-time youth ministry to figure this out. And for me and my wife, we didn't really totally fully embrace this and get this into our son, who's over here, is on the worship team, until our son came into our youth ministry. And all of a sudden, it was a huge shift in our thinking because we had one of our own kids there. And all of a sudden, we were like, oh, no, that game is terrible. Oh, no, don't preach that. No, don't do, you know, like it just everything changed for us in that moment. So if you're young, right? And by young, I just mean younger than me. but if you're young in youth ministry and your kids are young or you don't have any kids or you're not married yet, it can be very hard for you to fully embrace what I'm saying to you. And you can't really wrap your head around becoming a spiritual mom or spiritual dad. And then if you also come from a difficult background, like you came from a broken family yourself, then that makes it even harder. That's an even harder hurdle for you to physically or mentally get over because it's like, I don't even know how to do this. So if you can't see yourself, if you're a younger youth pastor in the room or a younger youth volunteer in the room, if you can't see yourself as a spiritual mom or spiritual dad, then see yourself as a spiritual big brother or big sister. See yourself as someone who has to model Christian maturity to the younger generation. I used to say to my leaders all the time, especially the older leaders that we had in our ministry. Again, I don't mean like very old. I just mean my age. I guess I'm getting old. Oh, this feels so terrible. All right. I used to say to them all the time, listen, our students do not need you to act cool. Because you're not cool. And you're never going to be cool. And don't try to dress like them because it's just funny, actually. Okay, just they don't need you to act cool. You know what? They just need you to be loving and caring and kind, right? They just need you to model for them and show them what healthy Christian maturity looks like, right? Because most of these kids don't have that in their home. You know what? I would say to my leaders, for some of you and for some of the kids in your small group, you're going to show them what a Christian marriage looks like because they have no idea what that's supposed to look like right now. And it's one of the reasons why we have kids wait until they're 30 years old because they're scared to get the marriage. Which, by the way, the older a young adult gets before they marry, the greater the statistical probability that they're going to get divorced. So you have a generation of students that were fatherless, had no mothers, right? And they grow up, they didn't see Christian marriage, represented for them. And so then they go into marriage themselves, not having any idea what it's like. One of the best things my wife and I ever did was instead of running around to all the kids' games and all their activities, which is great, I'm not against that, we just invited them into our home. Partially is because my wife is a second grade teacher and she's super busy and she didn't have time to do all that kind of stuff. And so the way that she could connect with students was when she just invited them to say, hey, I'm going grocery shopping, come with me. Hey, we're making Christmas cookies, come into my home. Hey, we're doing this little thing at our house, come over to the house. And we had so many kids during the years. It's again, we were student pastors at the same church for 15 and a half years, right? And over that time frame, we had so many kids who would say to us, I never knew that this is what family could be like. I never knew that this is what a Christian marriage could be like. We used to do an annual event. I'll wrap it up with this. Randy, you can make your way forward. We're going to wrap it up, and I know you got some announcements that you need to make. Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, we would invite all of our juniors and seniors over to our house for like an 11 p.m. late night Thanksgiving dinner, right? Just for fun, right? And so, sometimes other leaders would cook. Sometimes my wife would cook. But we have, you know, all these kids come into our house. And because they didn't have any school the next day. And so they would just stay, till 1, 2 in the morning, whatever. And just, turkey, mashed potatoes, corn, like whatever we could do. We just had, Thanksgiving dinner for them. Because we said, you belong here. That was our big thing that we always said. And we wanted to be spiritual moms and dads. We wanted to be family. And so everything that we did as a ministry, we wanted to wrap around that family feel, right? And so we'd have these kids come, and they'd eat, and they'd hang out. And we just would do nothing, no agenda, just eat food, and it was fun. I can't tell you how many students would say to me as they're walking out the door, they would say, Dad, thanks for dinner. And I'm like, oh, it's okay. It's just Thanksgiving dinner. You're going to get another one tomorrow. And they're like, no. No, this is it. This is all we're going to get. Like, tomorrow's nothing for us. Like, our family, we don't want to be together. So tomorrow, everyone's just going to kind of hide in their rooms all day and stare at their phones. And so like, I just impress upon you. And tomorrow we'll go a little bit deeper. We'll get a little bit more practical. I'll just give some practical tips for how I think you do it, how I think you train your leaders to become spiritual moms and dads. We might even like talk about like how you structure certain things or certain programs in your ministry that can help you kind of create this culture that I'm talking about. But I beg you, I plead with you, wrap your head and your heart around the number one calling of I'm going to become spiritual mom or spiritual dad to my kids. And it doesn't matter whether you've got 6 kids in your youth ministry or 600 kids in your youth ministry. The greatest thing that you and I have to offer the kingdom of God is not what we will do. It is who we will raise up. And you might be the youth pastor sitting here with 6 kids in your youth ministry, but all 6 of them might be called into full-time ministry and they could be world changers. And you're the one who passes the faith, the baton of faith to them, all right? Jesus, bless this group, bless this day, bless the breakout sessions, all the good stuff we're going to learn today. Thank you, God, for Spruce Lake and their commitment to invest in us as leaders. In your name I pray, amen.